नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नारं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यास ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टाप्रयेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भागवति उत्तम श्लोके भाग्यर्भवति नास्तिके ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Today we are going to read and study the verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, text number 33. Tribhuvana Kamanam Tamalavarnam Ravikara Gaura Varambaram Dadane Vapu Alakakula Avrita Anana Abjam Vijaya Sakhe Rati Astu Me Anavadya Tribhuvanakamanam tamalavarnam Ravikara Goravara Ambaram Dadane
Ravikara Goravara Ambaram Dadane
Vapura Laka Kula Britananajam
Vapura Laka Kula Britananajam
Vijaya Sakhe Ratirastu Minnavadya
Vijaya Sakhe Ratirastu Minnavadya
Tribhuvana Kamanam Tamalavarnam
Tribhuvana Kamanam Tamalavarnam
Ravikara Goravara Ambaram Dadane
Ravikara Goravara Ambaram Dadane
Vapura Laka Kula Britana Nabjam
Vapura Laka Kula Britana Nabjam
Vijaya Sakhe Ratir Astumena Vadya
Vijaya Sakhe Ratir Astumena Vadya
Tribhuvana Kamanam Tamalavarna
Vibhuvana Kamanam Tamalavarnam
Ravikara Goravara Ambaram Dadane
Ravikara Goravara Ambaram Dadane
Vapura Laka Kula Vritana Nabjam
Vapura Laka Kula Vritana Nabjam
Vijaya Sakhe Ratirastu Minnavadya
Vijaya Sakhe Ratirastu
Tribhuvana.
Tribhuvana.
Three statuses of planetary systems. Kamanam.
Kamanam.
The most desirable.
Tamalavarnam.
Bluish like the Tamala tree.
Bluish like the Tamala tree.
Ravikara,
Ravikara.
Sun rays.
Gaura,
golden color.
Varambaram,
glittering dress.
Dadane,
one who wears.
Vapu,
body. Alakakula Avrita,
Alakakula Avrita,
covered with paintings of sandalwood pulp. Anana Abjam,
Anana Abjam,
face like a lotus.
Face like a lotus.
Vijaya Sakhe,
Vijaya Sakhe,
unto the friend of Arjuna,
unto the friend of Arjuna,
Rati Astu,
Rati Astu,
may attraction be reposed upon him,
may attraction be reposed on him,
may. Anavadya,
Anavadya,
without desire for fruitive results.
Without desire for fruitive results.
Translation of the verse. Shri Krishna is the intimate friend of Arjuna. He has appeared on this earth in his transcendental body, which resembles the bluish color of the Tamala tree. His body attracts everyone in the three planetary systems, upper, middle, and lower. May his glittering yellow dress and his lotus face, covered with paintings of sandalwood pulp, be the object of my attraction, and may I not desire fruitive results. Please repeat. Shri Krishna is the intimate friend of Arjuna.
Shri Krishna is the intimate friend of Arjuna.
He has appeared on this earth in his transcendental body.
He has appeared on this earth in his transcendental body.
Which resembles the bluish color of the Tamala tree.
Which resembles the bluish color of the Tamala tree.
His body attracts everybody in the three planetary systems.
His body attracts everyone in the three planetary systems.
Upper, middle, and lower.
Upper, middle, and lower.
May his glittering yellow dress and his lotus face.
May his glittering yellow dress and his lotus face.
Covered with paintings of sandalwood pulp.
Covered with paintings of sandalwood pulp.
Be the object of my attraction.
Be the object of my attraction.
And may I not desire fruitive results.
And may I not desire fruitive results.
The following purport was written by His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When Sri Krishna, by his own internal pleasure, appears on earth, he does so by the agency of his internal potency. The attractive features of his transcendental body are desired in all the three worlds, namely the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. Nowhere in the universe are there such beautiful bodily features as those of Lord Krishna. Therefore, his transcendental body has nothing to do with anything materially created. Arjuna is described here as the conqueror, and Krishna is described as his intimate friend. Bhishmadeva, on his bed of arrows, after the battle of Kurukshetra, is remembering the particular dress of Lord Krishna, which is put on as the driver of Arjuna's chariot. While fighting was going on between Arjuna and Bhishma, Bhishma's attraction was drawn by the glittering dress of Krishna, and indirectly he admired his so-called enemy, Arjuna, for possessing the Lord as his friend. Arjuna was always a conqueror because the Lord was his friend. Bhishmadeva takes this opportunity to address the Lord as Vijayasakhe, a friend of Arjuna, because the Lord is pleased when he's addressed conjointly with his devotees who are related with him in different transcendental humors. While Krishna was the charioteer of Arjuna, sun rays glittered on the dress of the Lord, and his beautiful hue, created by the reflection of such rays, was never forgotten by Bhishmadeva. As a great fighter, he was relishing the relationship of Krishna in the chivalrous humor. Transcendental relation with the Lord in any one of the different rasas, humors, is relishable by the respective devotees in the highest ecstasy. Less intelligent mundaners who want to make a show of being transcendentally related with the Lord artificially jump at once to the relation of conjugal love, imitating the dancers of Rajadam. Such a cheap relation with the Lord exhibits only the base mentality of the mundaneer because one who has relished conjugal humor with the Lord cannot be attached to worldly conjugal rasa, which is condemned even by mundane ethics. The eternal relation of the particular soul with the Lord is evolved. A genuine relation of the living being with the Supreme Lord can take any form out of the five principal rasas, and it does not make any difference in transcendental degree to the genuine devotee. Bhishmadeva is a concrete example of this, and it should be carefully observed how the great general is transcendentally related with the Lord. Tribhuvana Kamananam Tamala Varnam Ravikara Gauravara Ambaram Dadane Vapur Alaka Kulavritananajam Vijayasake Ratir Astume Navadya. Sri Krishna is the intimate friend of Arjuna. He has appeared on this earth in his transcendental body, which resembles the bluish color of the Tamala tree. His body attracts everyone in the three planetary systems, upper, middle, and lower. May his glittering yellow dress and his lotus face, covered with paintings of sandalwood pulp, be the object of my attraction, and may I not desire fruity results. Om Magyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Shakshuram Militan Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayan Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalan Shri Gurun Vaishnavancha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitantam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamcha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kantarada Kantanamostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasa Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. We always chant this Mangala Charana mantra before speaking Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita or any Vedic literature, to make sure to pray our Lords, Guru and Krishna, to please make this conversation very auspicious, and that a nice atmosphere of speaking and listening be very deep, and that could bring a day of elevated thoughts in the heart and in the mind, both, for the whole day. So we hope, that's why we chant every time the Mangala Charana, which means prayers for auspiciousness every time we speak about sacred scriptures. Here Bhishmadeva is lying on his arrow bed, and he's looking at Sri Krishna, who is in front of him. He wasn't alone. There was not only Krishna and Arjuna, but there were many warriors all around. And there was thousands, millions of warriors still there. We relish the words of Bhishma that were very, very deep. Very devotional. And by these words, we could see, as we were saying 2 days ago in the class, that Bhishmadeva was not feeling any pain. He wasn't feeling any pain, because a person in pain cannot speak such words. They are so beautiful. Actually, you could see that his mind was completely disregarding his physical situation. He was just looking at his Lord, Lord Sri Krishna, and his pure devotee, Arjuna, and having no bad feelings towards them. Actually, Arjuna was the main archer. We spoke about Arjuna and Shikandin, but they were not only there two shooting arrows at Bhishma. Actually, there were hundreds of warriors shooting. There was Bhima and Yudhisthira and everybody. And it is said that the Srimad Bhagavatam, there while all these warriors, they were shooting at Arjuna, the Pandavas were crying, you know, tears from their eyes, because Bhishmadeva has been their beloved grandfather. So, but they had to do it, because this was Krishna's desire, that all these demons that gathered in this battlefield be completely defeated, as it happened. So we have Krishna and Arjuna and all the other warriors all around Bhishma and Bhishma line, and Bhishmadeva is waiting for the right time to give up the body. This time is called Uttarayana, is a very auspicious time. So a question may arise if Bhishmadeva, as he was a pure devotee, needed to die at the right moment to achieve perfection. He was a pure devotee. He was actually leaving the body in front of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Doesn't happen to everybody, and surely there is no stars or planets or anything more valuable than the personal presence of the Lord. So the answer to this is that when an acharya comes in this world, he gives a certain set of examples. Every acharya comes for particular reasons. You know, he gives a certain example depending from the public he has in front, depending from the people he is preaching to. Just like we have great acharyas speaking extremely simple philosophy, or we have even Vishnu avatara denying the authority of the Vedas. It's like the Lord writes down the Vedas, gives to the mankind the Vedas, and then he takes an incarnation and says, no, don't follow the Vedas. It's like the Buddha avatara. That was the case. And we have acharyas, even the greatest devotee of Vishnu, like Shiva, coming and preaching impersonal philosophy. So the philosophy that Shankaracharya preached is probably the most venomous philosophy ever conceived in the history of mankind. This is what our Acharya said. There is no worse philosophy than the Mayavada or Advaitavada. Advaitavada and Mayavada, there is a difference between the two. We can talk about these two philosophies maybe after or some other day. We have all the time in the world, Krishna willing. So Bhishmadeva wanted to preach to yogis because he was a great yogi. Actually, he was using yogic powers to maintain his life in the body until that time. So there was one very important teaching that the Bhishma was giving to yogis, not to us. And so to us, it was a teaching that at the moment of death, we have to remember Lord Krishna and glorify Krishna. This is a very important statement by Bhishmadeva, saying that I don't desire fruitive results. And he was dying, what results could he desire? So he was telling us, don't work to have a result. Don't do that. Just work. By that, the work in itself is sufficient. When you go to do something, do it for the Lord and for the Guru, for the Vaishnavas. Don't work because you want a position, because you want to be recognized, because you want to be temple president, because you want the money, you know, to do this and to do that. Just do it for Krishna. The activity belongs to you, not the results. The results may be there, and the result may not be there. It doesn't really matter, because the result does not depend on our effort. A sin does not depend on our effort. We have not the right to it. So should we not desire a result while we do our devotional service? For instance, if we go to Sankirtan and distribute books, should we desire to distribute many books or not? We should just desire to distribute books. The answer, the right answer, is that we should desire to distribute a lot of books. So the point is that if we cannot distribute the books, then we should not feel bad, you know, because you put the effort. And when the results of distributing the books, be that money or recognition or everything, that we should not, we are not entitled to. So if we go in Sankirtan, we should desire to go in Sankirtan, and we should desire to have a good result, but for Krishna, not for ourselves. This is our philosophy. There was a time in our movement when the push for Sankirtan was so big, you know, was like unbelievable. During Prabhupada times, or right after Srila Prabhupada, the temple was divided in two factions, into two groups, those who went in Sankirtan or those who didn't go in Sankirtan. The Sankirtan devotees were saying that those who stayed in the temple were actually not even devotees. Yeah, they were like, you know, okay, yeah, okay, you can stay in the temple, but they were tolerated. So, and they were going in Sankirtan, and those devotees who couldn't make, because we had, how you call it, fixed result, minimum results.
A quota,
yes, correct. A quota, and those devotees, I remember one time I was in Milano, in North Italy. And so I was going to some conference, a very nice conference actually, in a library, and there were, you know, 100-150 people, so it was a big conference in a bookstore where it came, a lot of devotees actually came from these conferences. We gave 3 or 4 conferences. So I was going there and coming back with a train, and I met a devotee, and it was at 10:30 in the night, and this devotee was distributing books there in the train station. And I asked this devotee, what are you doing 10:30 in the night? And he said, I didn't make my quota, and the Sankirtan leader threw me out of the ashram, and until I don't do my quota, he will not allow me to sleep. So there were some you know, far out times. And of course, this is not our philosophy. This is not what we want. So we should go in Sankirtan, distribute books, and have a full desire to do the best, and we should put all effort. But you will be surprised that sometimes you will do very well, sometimes the same, with the same effort, you do not do very, very good. It doesn't depend on you. Krishna prefers that you learn certain lessons, that you distribute these books actually. So sometimes he will put you in a very difficult situations, and he wants to see how you learn from those situations. So this is what Bhagavad Gita teaches us in the second part of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and the whole of the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna talks on the science of action, how we should behave. So here Bhishma Deva is talking about not desiring fruitful results from what I do. So he was not asking Krishna please give me a speech of word. He was not asking anything to Krishna. He was only asking to please stay in my mind, stay in front of me, let me glorify you. This is what the devotee wants. The devotee only want to serve and Shri Krishna with full love, and this is devotee life. The devotee does not want anything else. And it was particularly interesting the fact that Bhishmadeva was calling Krishna Vijayasaka. Vijaya is the name of Arjuna, which means the conqueror. Jai, when we say Jai, means all glories, means victory. This is the meaning of the word Jai. So Vijay, sometimes V is used as a negative to say not, and sometimes means to use it as the most, to the great, how you say it in English? Mm-hmm. A majorative or something like that? No? English pandit, how you say? No. Okay, you understood.
Superlative.
Yeah, superlative, like to say very much. You know? Vijaya means a great conqueror. And Saka means friend. So this is very important, because we can see from this how much Krishna loves his devotees, so much so that he likes to be called the friend of my devotee. Sometimes we used to say, oh, the devotee is a friend of Krishna, but Krishna likes to be called all around. He likes to be called that I am the friend of my devotee. He likes to glorify his devotee, see the way you love. And Bhishmadeva, liked that very much, and he understood the principle. He wanted to tell us by calling Krishna Arjuna Saka, that Krishna love his devotee very much, and this is why you are still standing up and I am here on the bed of arrows. That Arjuna won so many battles because he was Krishna's friends. It was not other reason. There is a very nice story, very short story actually, an anecdote in the Mahabharata, that at the very end of the war, when everything was finished, and so Krishna and Arjuna came back in their camp, and Krishna said to Arjuna, please get down. Usually Krishna was the first to get down on the chariot, but this time Krishna said to Arjuna, please, you get down. And Arjuna said, why you are asking me that? And Krishna said, just do it. And Arjuna got down on the chariot, and then Krishna got down on the chariot, and that famous chariot with Hanuman on the flag and everything, you know, just burst in flame and got in powder, and dust, just in one moment. And Arjuna was very surprised. And Krishna said, you don't understand. You think to have won this war, but actually you are not being burned by Bhishma and Drona and Karna and so many great warriors. Weapons only because I was in the chariot. If I would have got down in the chariot first, you would have been burned with the chariot. So don't think that you are the one who won so much. You won because of my mercy. So this is very important, and it reveals Arjuna's intelligence, because you know the story how Arjuna became the charioteer of Arjuna. You know the story. You should know. You are a pandit. But Mike, you know the story?
How Krishna became
the charioteer of Arjuna.
Krishna offered
Duryodhana himself or his army.
Right.
Right.
Arjuna was taking rest on his bed, and the warrior was approaching. So Arjuna ran to Dwarka, tried to find help. Actually, they were going around the whole of India, the whole of planet, actually. There were armies from Russia and from Afghanistan. It was not just an Indian. At that time, there was no such a thing as India. So so there is a description of Afghanistan and all these other countries, and warriors coming. So they went, Arjuna rushed to Krishna's bedroom, and when he arrived, he saw that Duryodhana also has come at the same time. You know, actually, but Arjuna arrived there a little before. So Krishna was sleeping. They entered into the room because they were part of the family. So the guards allowed them to come in. And usually when someone wakes up, he opens the eyes and he looks to the person who is in front of the eyes. So Duryodhana was standing in front of Krishna, looking at his face like this. But Arjuna, since he was a Sikh devotee, he kneeled at his feet. So there was a Krishna laying down and Arjuna kneeling at his feet, and Duryodhana very proudly, you know, was a king, staring at Krishna on the top. So when Krishna woke up, this time he didn't look up, but he looked down, so he saw Arjuna first. You know, it was like this, looking at Arjuna, kneeling. And he said, "Oh, Arjuna, my friend, you have come. What can I do for you?" You know, and then he saw Duryodhana also. And Duryodhana said, "Well, I came first, so I should first ask my boon, what I want from you." And Krishna said, "Yes, you may have come before, but I saw Arjuna first. So Arjuna should ask, but I know why you are here. So it's obvious that you want my help in this battle that is coming. And I know that you want my military help, but then I had to give something to both. So I will divide what I have. On one side, my whole army, which are basically all Vishnu avatars. They were called the Narayanas. That was the name of Krishna's army. And on the other side, I will be only myself." And Duryodhana said, "Yes, but only you can win the war only by yourself. You are so powerful." And then Krishna said, "Okay, I will not fight. Only myself." Mm. But first, Arjuna should ask. And Duryodhana was in a great anxiety because he was so attached to that army. And what I'm going to do with Krishna, you know, he's not going to fight. No, that's useless, he thought. And Arjuna then asked, "No, I want you." And Duryodhana was in ecstasy. He was very, very happy. "Oh, now I got my army. Thank you very much." He went away. And Arjuna and Sri Krishna asked Arjuna, "Why did you do that? You led my whole army, thousands and millions of great, the greatest warriors in the world. You gave it to Duryodhana. Why is that?" And Arjuna smiled and he said, "I understand who you are. So I know that wherever you are, there is victory. You don't need to fight to win this battle if you only want it." And Krishna was very pleased with his devotee understanding, deep understanding of his nature and the divine plan. And he said, "Okay, ask me another boon." And Arjuna said, "I have a very, very old desire that is in my heart since many, many years. Many lives, that you drive my chariot in the battlefield." And Sri Krishna smiled and understood that this desire of Arjuna was another part of completing the perfect picture that Krishna and Arjuna together on the battlefield, on the charioteer, will win the battle. There is no doubt. And even the Bhagavad Gita says, wherever there is Krishna and Arjuna, there is victory. We have this beautiful description of Bhishma Deva, or Krishna's body. I wanted to say something about the word Arjuna Saka, and also the word Anavadya, which means without desire for fruitful results. There is a lot to say on this verse. We can go on and on for a week, maybe more, talking about the verse. And Srila Prabhupada, most beautiful purport actually, is talking about rasas, he's talking so many beautiful topics. But I want to know if you have any questions about anything discussed in this verse and commentary. Can you please? I know that it's a moderation, but it's important for the people.
Okay, no problem.
You know, although Krishna agreed not to fight in the battle, what effect, you know, did he have just being a chariot driver? I mean, he had to have, you know, affected the battle.
Well, we can say that from the material point of view, he had he made a huge impact on the final results, because if you study the Mahabharata, then you see that many times Krishna physically saved Arjuna. You know, for instance, I can make just a few examples, and of course there is a story already told, is how his presence, his power, protected Arjuna, so much so that when Krishna and Arjuna got down on the chariot just burst in flame. So in this way, his transcendental power, although invisible to everyone, is protected Arjuna. But for instance, during the duel, is it correct? With Karna, and they were fighting, and Karna, although he was stripped off of some of his most precious weapons. He had basically three weapons, and with these three weapons he could defeat Arjuna. First of all, he had his armor. He was born with a natural armor. You know, if you stab him, it wouldn't do anything to him, because he was like, you know, he was, and he had to give it away. Of course, you may ask, in what situation? And now, maybe next time I will can tell. Actually, one devotee asked me a few days ago if I could tell the story of Karna. Maybe next time, next Bhagavatam class, we can talk about this. And then he had some divine earrings. And then he had a very special spear. Spear or spear? A spear which Indra had given him, and with that spear he could kill anybody, just anybody. So Krishna protected him the day that the spear was used. He was keeping the spear for Arjuna, But every time Arjuna would push Krishna, please go to Karna, I want to fight Karna. And Krishna says, no, you cannot fight Karna because he has a weapon. Arjuna would insist, but Krishna would drive the chariot somewhere else every time. And Arjuna could not understand. I could not accept it also. I want to fight Karna, driving me there. And Krishna was always avoiding. And then one day, there was this killing of Abhimanyu. This is also another very beautiful story from the Mahabharata. Anyway, just to make it short, then it was the only day, that was the 14th day of the battle, that the battle, the fighting didn't stop at sunset. They went the whole night. So some of the warriors fighting in both of the army, they were Rakshasas. And so the power of the Rakshasa grows hundreds of times during the night time. And there was this son of Bhima, whose name was Ghatotkach. Who ever heard about Ghatotkach? He's a very famous personality in the Mahabharata story. And he was dissolving the Kurava's army. It was just a monster. He was flying in the sky. He was huge. He was killing everybody. And then Duryodhana himself pushed Karna to use his spear. And he had to use it. But that weapon could be used only once. So he killed Ghatotkach. And it was Krishna's doing. But even during the battle, when Karna aimed a very powerful arrows toward Arjuna, Krishna increased the weight of his body, and he became so heavy that the chariot sank down in the mud. So this arrow didn't strike Arjuna's neck, but his diadem. Arjuna had a diadem for which is called Savyasachin. He had a very, very beautiful crown in the head that it was given to him by the devas when he went to the upper planets. And so many times Krishna, another time when Bhagadatta sent his javelin against him, against Arjuna, he put himself in the front and he took the javelin on his chest. He protected the impact of Krishna's presence. It was huge in the battlefield. So many times Krishna protected Arjuna. But of course there is something behind, something hidden, and not that cannot be seen, that cannot be perceived, which is Krishna's presence, who makes you win only because his transcendental presence and power. So in both ways, materially and spiritually, Krishna helped Arjuna to win the war, the Pandavas.
That was my question, similar question that
would be divided into.
It's
okay.
It's very sensitive. I have to be careful.
Yeah, it's very sensitive.
That, you know, Krishna said he won't fight, but there's all these like you just mentioned, all these instances that where he does get involved in an indirect way. So one might object to Krishna is, you know, breaking his word, so to speak. And we understand for his devotee, Krishna is ready to do that. But, you know, the moralist, they like to object Krishna for doing all these things. That it's against moral, against the, you know, the truthfulness, or, you know, just the basic dharma of a man keeping his word. So how do you respond? Because, you know, obviously, you know, Krishna does in a passive, indirect way gets involved. So is that breaking his word, or
he has an exclusive right to break the law as Supreme Person. How does one respond to? Because there's many, like, you know, Krishna going in the dead of night with the other man's wife, you know, and on, you know, objections to Krishna's behavior. How does one respond to that?
Yeah, our literature is full of this. I may say it, objectionable. Is that correct? Behavior that you can object, that you can doubt. And in one sense, Krishna is the origin of Dharma. Be the Dharma, material level or spiritual level. We had discussed a few days ago about the different types of dharmas. We have the most, the utmost dharma, which is transcendental. Dharma means the nature of the soul. But there are also other inferior dharmas. There are also the dharma of a man who should keep his word. This is extremely important. Why we should keep our word? Because that will elevate us, while breaking our principles and breaking our promises, that will degrade us. But there is nothing that elevates or degrades Krishna, because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he is a very good example, actually, because we can see by Krishna's life how he was extremely regulated, how he maintained the Kshatriya Dharma in many occasions, but in some other occasion he did not. So why he kept the Dharmas? Because to give the good example. Why he didn't keep his Dharma? Because he wanted to teach something else. For instance, it's very dharmic, and Krishna says, I do the things to give it a good example because people follow the great men. This is a Bhagavad Gita. But Krishna also says, I will always protect my devotees. So let's say that we have these two dharmas, or these two promises, let's call them. One, I will not fight, and the other one, I will always protect my devotees. So Krishna is in the situation where my devotees, his devotees, are without protection. They are being defeated, they are being killed. They can be killed by the situation. So he has to choose what is the highest principle in that particular situation. Will I maintain my word to not intervene in the battle, or should I save Arjuna? So in that situation he chose to protect his devotees, because there is a superior principle. And what about Krishna going out in the night with somebody else's wives? Because it's a very important principle, human society. But those were his devotees, those were his wives in the spiritual world. So they wanted to play with Krishna, and Krishna says, I will always give my devotees what they need. I will always satisfy my devotees. There was the whole reasons of his incarnation is coming down in the earthly. This is called the Bauma Vrindavan, which means the earthly Vrindavan, to play and to give superior rasa that in the Goloka Vrindavan you cannot find. So let's say that we put up some drama, you know, where I play the part of somebody and you play something else, and, you know, some lady plays a part. And is that real? I mean, are we really fighting? For instance, a drama where me and you, we are fighting, We are fighting, and I win you because I play the part of a stronger. You are physically the double of me. I cannot defeat you physically. But it is just a play. It's not real. It's not those gopis and those ladies were not actually the wives of somebody else. It was a play. So much so the scripture themselves, they say that even Abhimanyu, not Arjuna's son, but Srimati Radharani's wife, Abhimanyu was his husband, but Rupa Goswami says Abhimanyu is really a concept, actually. You know, they never united, they never really stayed together, they were not husband and wife. Because Srimati Radharani cannot be touched by anyone, only Krishna. So this is just a big, huge play. You know, it's a drama. It's a very beautiful play where your wife plays the part of somebody's wife, but actually she is not. You see? So it's just a very beautiful, very enchanting adventure that Krishna performed in this planet. Where so many people took parts, just like in a drama. Krishna played the part of the cowboy, and Arjuna played the part of a Bhishma Deva played. It's just playing parts. And so sometimes, since Krishna has to do many things in the same incarnation, sometimes he plays parts to give example. Sometimes it's the reason is more he's hidden. Only devotees can understand, while the non-devotees will understand only when Krishna gets up every day and does his ablutions and does his praying. You know, he puts a tilak and all these things. You know, and Radharani, they place the sun god. You know, the deva or Radharani was a sun god. Das Radharani needs to worship the sun god. You know, this is only for other people. And the gopis asking Katayani, you know, to have a good husband. You know, this is play. But since the same teachings come from the same incarnation, this is confusing to somebody. But there is no way around. So in this way, the devotees will understand, the non-devotees will not understand. And this is good also, because it will put a clear distinction between those who are devotees and those who are not devotees. Those who are not devotees, doesn't matter what Krishna does, they will not understand. There are books telling how what happens in the spiritual world. The non-devotees can read them. They are just there, you know. You take the Brahma Vaivarta Purana and you see what happens in the spiritual world. They're not attracted anyway. Even Krishna's activity in the spiritual world are perfect. So there is no way around for those who are not devotees.
Yeah, I think there was one of the themes from the yesterday's verse. Can we also say that we as aspiring devotees also have to make that differentiation of knowing how to apply the law? I mean, we can talk about dharma, but there's as they say, a letter of the law and the spirit of the law. As Rupa Goswami mentioned, you know, there's Niyamagraha and then Niyamagraha, you know, knowing how to actually apply the law. Because sometimes, you know, like you were mentioning, the higher principle, that there are higher principles involved, and then you have to, on one side, disobey in order to apply. So as devotees, I guess Krishna is teaching, or, you know, Krishna is also giving an example. Or he's being an example for this kind of practical, you know, common sense thing that we face in a real life. So he has to do that.
So he teaches that by example also. You have to consider one principle and then the higher principle. Like that. Can we say like that? Is it okay to say like that?
I think that sometimes to obey the law, you have to disobey the law.
Yeah.
It's like there are times and situations where obeying the law will go against the law itself. So for just to make an example, we have in our tradition very high standards. Here in San Antonio, many of those standards are not obeyed. Why? Because you are bad? No. Because you can't. So you know what are the standards, but you will follow them when it will be possible. So what it would mean if you would follow all the rules and regulations of Gaudiya Vaishnava here? There are two or three devotees, you know. Some younger, the very young devotees, and some and senior Vaishnava like you. It will make life impossible. Will make you would not be able to go in Sankirtan if you would follow all the rules and regulations, you know, in the kitchen and in the altar worship, etc. Will go against our the best interest. So by disobeying, you know, the law, you are actually following the spirit of the law. And all the external manifestation of the law will manifest in time when it will be possible and when you will know against the spirit of the law. So this is an example. We can make tens of examples, but I'm sure that this makes understand. So what will happen if Krishna would have allowed Arjuna to be killed on the battlefield? That's the whole reason why Krishna came. Well, one of the reasons why Krishna came in this world was to defeat the demons. So, and Arjuna was one of the main helper for satisfying the reason why he came in this world. So he wanted the devotees to be successful, and he let Arjuna to die only because he promised not to find the battle. It doesn't make sense. Doesn't really make sense. In this way, he was disobeying the Dharma of maintaining the world, but by disobeying, he was actually obeying the Dharma, because the Dharma was that the devotees should rule, not the demons. So in that case, in that particular situation, the promise of Krishna was definitely a secondary concern, and protecting the devotees, because that would mean maintaining the highest principle of Dharma. That is another example that we can see of breaking the law, so-called, to actually obey the spirit of the law.
And considering that's clear now, it's obvious that Krishna is considering the higher principle. So now that that is established, one can ask, well, why Krishna didn't get involved like all the way? If that's his main concern, he could have just wiped the whole thing in no time and save everybody a lot of energy, a lot of time. Why he kept it in the borderline if that's the principle that he's mainly concerned? Why didn't get involved more than just, you know, indirectly, passively, like that? Did he want Arjuna to take the glory?
Well, this is not how it works in Krishna's world, be that in the spiritual world or in the material world. The way Krishna is, we had to study his psychology, which means the way he thinks, the way he does things, the way he's a person, just like me and you. So you like to do things in a certain way. I like to do things in another way. You know, is there something wrong, or something may be objectively wrong, or just, I don't know. You like to keep the light almost off. You know, I love full light in the temple room, because this is how, you know, we have been accustomed the whole our life, that even in Mongol art, you could, so is that wrong what you do? I don't know, I don't care. Basically, this is how you like it. And in my home, when I do puja, all the lights are on completely. This is just a very stupid example, just to make an example how we are persons. We have personal tastes, and we do things differently. So Krishna also likes to do things in a certain way. So what is the pleasure in exercising always a supreme power and personality? You know, then what about love? If Krishna would exercise his absolute power, then there was no reason for the devotees to play with him, to chastise him, to just like I remember when my son was very young, was a child, and I really loved to wrestle with him, you know, when he was 2-3 years old. So now I cannot do any more because he's bigger than me. But he was, when he was very small. So let's say that I would exercise all my strengths when he was 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever, 7, 8. You know, then what would be the result?
There's no drama.
That he won't fight with me anymore. He won't wrestle with me anymore, because he will always lose. So I will let him win sometimes. You know, and sometimes he would just slap me, you know, and I would fall down. You know, there was a play, it was a game between father and son. So is manifesting our own power the most important thing in life, in the spiritual world, or not? The answer is no. There are much higher principles like bhakti or prema or love. Krishna let his devotees do things, because otherwise it becomes like one absolute ruler, and everybody else, oh my God, you know, I can't do anything because he's most more powerful than me. You don't have space. Just like when he comes here, this most senior devotee of you, then you have to basically obey what everything he says. Then what you are going to do with your life? What you are going to do with your intelligence? What you are going to do with your free, manifestation of your personality? You know. So the same way, Krishna, if Krishna had used all his power in the battlefield, he would have won in 1 second, yes. But if we would have used all his power, there was no point even to start the battle. There was no point even for somebody to be a demon, because he would have created all devotees. So why Krishna created this freedom that sometimes... That someone uses and someone misuses by becoming demons. Then we can go back, and then we see no reasons about the material world. Why did he make the material world? Could he make us all perfect like him and choose the right thing? Then how do you say that in English? The free
free will.
What about free will? If he would have created us all forcibly devotees, there was no free will. And if there is no free will, there is no love, because love is characterized by freedom. There is no love without freedom. So if you want love, you have to create people free. And if you create people free, you also have to accept that someone freely uses and someone freely misuses. And then some of this free misuse of freedom becomes antagonism. And antagonism, you need a material world, because antagonists cannot stay in the spiritual world. And then you have demons, and then you have all sorts of people, and you have to accept and respect their freedom. Krishna is to respect. Well, not he doesn't have to do anything. Krishna chooses freely to respect everyone's freedom. So that's why he doesn't use his complete powers, because if he will use it, then what about my freedom? Krishna, only because it's big, then they must do what he wants. No, then Krishna, okay, no, I will not use my powers, and you continue to do what you want. And that's why, yes, okay. And that's why we have all these situations when, unless you are a real huge demons, you know, like arming the entire planets, like, you know, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravana, Kumbhakar, unless you don't become a real big demon, he respects the small demons and let them deal with the material nature and not directly with him. Why not? Because he's too powerful. He is too powerful, and then the demons will not have the freedom to be demons.
One thing about free will, although he does respect our free will and gives us a free will, as Lord Chaitanya, he comes and seems like he comes and he leaves no choice to anybody in terms of that. By his beauty, by his majesty, he steals the way. He steals away the free will of devotees, so to speak. That, you know, devotee is not left with not a choice but to surrender to all attractive, all munificent Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So indirectly, you know, he does, you know, free will exists, but indirectly kind of robs it. He robs it away, or he claims it back, and because, you know, he's so magnanimous. Sometimes it seems like that.
No, actually, it does not take your free will. He inspires your free will by his beauty. You freely accept his beauty because he's so beautiful. So he behaves in an attractive way, but you go to him. So much so that we can see that even during Lord Chaitanya, not everybody accepted him. We even had his own personal servant leaving him, like the Krishna Das, you remember the story. When there was this Brahmana who fell down, a victim of sexual attraction. And we have so many examples, even ourselves. We have devotees, so many people coming in the temple, and not everyone stays. And we have temples with extremely beautiful deities, but you can, and beautiful philosophy, very tasteful prasadam, everything is so attractive and everything is so beautiful, but they don't accept because they are free. So as you say, in one sense Krishna leaves no choice, but actually he acts as an inspiration to freely choose his beauty against the not attractive material nature. That's it. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.